We started 10 weeks ago. This is one of those sermon series that if you weren't paying attention, you were just kind of missing out, because you could have picked and chosen any Sunday to come to based on what you wanted to hear. We started 10 weeks ago on going through the Ten Commandments. And so we have now reached today number 10. And so it's going to kind of wrap this up. But I want to do a quick review. All right. 10 weeks ago we started. Number one, you shall have no other gods before me. Number two, you shall not make idols. Number three, you shall not take the Lord's name in vain. Number four, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Number five, honor your father and mother. Number six, you shall not murder. Number seven, you shall not commit adultery. Number eight, you shall not steal. And number nine, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Now, I'll tell you this. If you were here for all nine of those, and you obey them, your life's doing pretty well today. That's kind of the way it is with keeping the commands and the statutes of God. Today's number 10, and it holds an interesting place in the list of 10, as well as the list of 613, all of the rules. Exodus chapter 20, verse 17, this is the 10th commandment. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his manservant, or his maidservant, his ox or donkey, or anything else. Now, I read that list and I think, really, you needed to list house, wife, manservant, maidservant, ox, and donkey, as apparently those that needed to be delineated somehow, and then tack on the big one, or anything else. We are not to covet. God's people are not to covet. It is not a word we use much anymore. I'm guessing not a single person here used it this week. You may this coming week. I don't know. We'll see. The word covet, even though we don't use it, we know pretty well what it means, at least when we get the definition. To covet means to possess this strong desire to have what belongs to somebody else. Usually is reserved for tangible things, but it's not reserved just for the tangible. The Hebrew word for covet, where we get this word, can also be translated to desire. So we could like switch those around. As long as we give the definition to desire as something stronger than what we normally do in our normal conversation. Because desire or covet means to have this kind of ungoverned, unbridled, selfish desire that threatens the basic rights of other people. So it's more than just, I'd like one of those. It's something that is much deeper. And coveting, when Moses brought the tablets down, as well as today, it's sinful because it creates this kind of greedy focus that we can have on the property that belongs to a neighbor. Not their necessarily just their land, but what they possess. why this was such a big deal when Moses came down from the mountain is that everybody, you know, all of the Jews were going to possess their share in the land that God had promised them. Everybody is going to have some. And if you had somebody walking around going, I think I'm going to take what's yours. I really want what's yours. That is fairly disruptive to healthy community living, to have somebody that is always doing that. So that's kind of the framework of this command. Now, let's talk about us. To covet means to want what others have. It could be specific. In other words, I could look at you and go, ooh, I really want your car. Okay? That's kind of a specific coveting. Or it could be something more general that, you know, I really want the life you have. I don't like mine. I want the life you have. And that speaks of coveting. But it's not just wanting what somebody else has, but it's kind of the extension of this. It's wanting what I don't have. Does that make sense? It's I recognize that there are things I don't have and I want them so badly that it begins to dominate my thought life. It's about wanting more. And I'll tell you, this command, more than any of the others, represents our battlefield. This is the one. You know, each one of the previous nine, I think all of us could have picked out some part of that command and had it apply to our life in one way or the other. You know, something that we were wrestling with or something that reflected a value or a priority that I was struggling with. All nine of them. This one is ours. This one represents the very struggle that you and I exist in day after day after day. And that is the struggle of wanting more of anything. And I'm telling you, don't restrict this to wanting physical things. It's just want. I want this to be gone. I want this kind of life. I want one of those. I want this to be gone. I want this person out of my life. I want, I want, I want, I want, I want. That is our battlefield. And none of us are exempt from this. This command deals with an attitude of the heart. It's almost as if the other nine are all dealing with specific actions. This one is dealing with a condition. This one is dealing with something that is deeper than what anybody can see sometimes, because you can look at me right now and you can go, that's a pretty content guy. And I could be masking all of my discontent and all of my wants in front of you and you may never know it. It may be eating me away inside and you would never guess. Because coveting is a condition of the heart. Perhaps maybe more than any other, it focuses on interior, not exterior. This one is not concerned so much with what we do, even though it's really a simple thing. Don't covet, you know, an ox. You know, don't covet a specific thing. And this one is deeper. It has to do with what we think. You see, the eighth commandment forbids stealing. The tenth commandment says, don't even think about it. The seventh command says, don't commit adultery. the tenth says, don't even let your mind go there. You see, before a thief ever steals, he has first coveted his neighbor's possessions. It's the prerequisite. But before a man and woman ever give in to the act of adultery, they have first coveted the other's spouse. They started thinking about it. Before the first word of slander, before the first bearing of false witness is ever uttered out of somebody's mouth, gossip has already coveted a neighbor's reputation in thought. You see, that's why this one is so deadly. Because we can look at ourselves and go, I'm not stealing anything. I'm not committing adultery. Now, this one is deeper, much deeper. This command doesn't mean that we can't desire anything. We all have ambition. We all have goals, hopefully. There are things that we want for our life, and I think to want something in a healthy way is, at a minimum, it provides motivation for hard work. You know, parents, come on, you've looked at your kids who lay around playing video games, okay? And you go, I just want them to want more out of their life, right? There's nothing wrong with wanting to want more out of life. I just picked on kids. I could have flipped that one easily. In this command, it is a desire for things that don't belong to you. That's the specific. Or maybe just excessive craving for things simply because somebody else has them. It's another way of talking about greed or jealousy or envy. We're all subject to it. We're getting ready to go into this season where you're getting bombarded with commercials that tell you your life is not complete without fill in the blank. You need one of these. The one you have is not good enough. You need more. So the mistake that we all struggle with when we think about this command, and this is where it gets uncomfortable and we have to talk about these things regularly, the mistake is not being content or grateful for what we do have. That's at the heart of this. You know, it's interesting, when I planned out this series, I didn't start from the end and work backwards, you know, to see how many weeks we had and where it was going to end up. I think it's fascinating that today ends at the convergence of Thanksgiving and Christmas. This is the one Sunday where the two bleed over, don't they? So, you know, we have a Christmas tree of sorts, okay, on Thanksgiving weekend. They bleed over. How many of you went out and got your Christmas decorations out of the attic already and started putting things up? Okay? It's Thanksgiving, for crying out loud. Okay? And yet this is what we're doing. Okay? They bleed over. They blend in, Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I was thinking about it and going, what better way to address the convergence of Thanksgiving and Christmas than to talk about the command, do not covet. Do not covet. What a great way to start off the Christmas season. Well, looking at this command is an absolutely amazing way to be challenged to get our priorities straight. To see ourselves and others the way that God does. It's such a simple principle on paper. So difficult to live out. Paul wrote about it in Philippians chapter 4, verse 12. This was his way of talking about it. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. The Apostle Paul had mastered something that the rest of us spend our lives working at, trying to figure out. He had learned to be content in whatever situation he was in. He had learned to be satisfied with whatever cards he was dealt. He had learned to be satisfied with whatever came his way, whether it was a lot or a little. Take a moment, just a second here, and ask yourself the question, have you learned the secret of being content in any and every situation that you will ever find yourself in? Are you content? Are you satisfied with what you have? Like I said, this is our battlefield. This is the one that gets us. This is the one that reaches up and grabs us and headlocks us and takes us down. Is discontent. I don't like what I'm going through right now. I don't like what I have. I want something different than what I've got now. It needs to change. So he says, I've learned the secret. So we read the passage, we go, well, dude, what's the secret? You know, are you just going to sit on it? Are you just going to say, wow, I've learned the secret. You guys get to spend your whole life trying to figure it out? Not really. Because just a little later in his writing to the Philippians, he actually states the secret. He states the truth that he builds his life on, that we can likewise. It's in the 19th verse of the same chapter. So he writes this, and my God will meet all your needs according to His glorious riches in Christ Jesus. I have enough when I have Jesus. That's the secret. When I have Jesus, I don't need anything else. And we go, time out. Okay, that sounds all spiritual and good. But in reality, I need some other stuff too to make me happy. And Paul would say, well, I beg to differ. Now, we need water. We need air. We need shelter. We need clothes. In order to get those things, we need jobs. We need transportation. We need a lot of things. I get that. And I think if Paul were here in the 21st century, he would say the same thing. Yeah, I get it. But above and beyond those things is where contentment is found. And Paul would say, well, you can still be content. You can still have a deep and abiding satisfaction in life if you don't have the job, or you don't have the transportation, or you're not living where you want to live, or you're not working where you want to work, or you're not fill in the blank. Because contentment is something that resides deeper inside than in just the externals of the things that we live with. in Christ, we have the most serious and deepest needs of our heart met. And we are provided with the strength to face all of the other situations. That's why Paul can say, whether I have plenty or whether I am in want, whether I am in jail or whether I am free, whether I am sick or whether I am healthy, I've learned the secret of being content. Because contentment is something that is deep inside. Deep inside is where we wrestle with coveting. When we covet, at its core, we are rejecting the wisdom of God. Coveting makes us think that we know better than what God does, especially about what makes us happy. We have all grown up in a culture. I did 50 years before some of you did. And we're driven by the same thing. It's the statement that precedes all other statements. The statement is, I'll be happy when. I'll be happy when. Fill in the blank for yourself. You don't have to raise your hand. But we've all got it. We can all answer the question. I'll be happy when this happens. Until this happens, I'm not going to be happy. I'll be happy when I get this, when I go there, when this changes. I'll be happy then. Until then, I'm not going to be. Fact of the matter is, God gives good gifts all of the time. It's our responsibility to be grateful for what we have instead of focusing on what we don't have. Look, today's lesson is about as elementary as it gets. This is the same lesson that every parent in this room tried to hammer into your kids when they were three. Be grateful for what you have. Okay? How's that going for you? Okay? You know this one? Say thank you. Thank you. No, you need to say it like you mean it. Thank you. Isn't that what your kids do? Okay? Because they're wrestling with the very thing that the 10th commandment is talking about. It's this internal dissatisfaction with the way that things are and wanting them to be different. The crazy thing about jealousy or envy is that it stirs up a desire for things that we never knew we wanted to have until we saw somebody else get them. Isn't that crazy? You didn't know you wanted that until somebody else got one. You go, I want one of those. And then our life is reordered to try to get one of those. Because they're happier than I am. Look at how happy they are because they got one of those. My life will be happy if I get one of those. I think Jesus would say, actually, your life can be happy right now. It can be happy right now. People who covet are never satisfied. They will seek things and moments and thrills and trips and memories until they find them. And then, like an addict, they need more. You see, coveting is a disease. We see the beginning stages of it, and no, it's cute, okay, right now. We all think it's cute. Christmas Day is coming. And you're going to see your children tear into things. And you're going to try to slow that train down. You know how you try to do that? No, we're going to go one at a time. And we're going to watch each one of us open our gifts one at a time. And we're going to savor the joy that each person has seeing what they get. What are your kids doing when they're watching so-and-so open their present? They're already tearing in silently. You know, trying to open it, trying to see what it is. You know, it's just kind of the way that we're wired. Some people would say it's our sin nature. I'm not sure I would go that far. I just think it's the way we are. I've had friends of mine through the years where it required counseling. I mean, like serious counseling. To try to help them with the disease of shopping. Now you can giggle a little bit because there's lots of jokes about that. But the truth of the matter is, it is something much deeper for many people. I've told you some years ago. I had a youth ministry intern out in California that honestly he dealt with his depression. He dealt with his inner demons by buying things. So when something really bad happened in his life, he would buy something really big. It always corresponded with the depth of his depression. And there was a day that he showed up at work, and he showed up with a brand new truck. Okay, this was a youth ministry intern. We don't pay peanuts to interns, okay? He showed up with a brand new truck. And all I said to him was, having a bad week, huh? His answer was, yep. He needed to get help for that because it ultimately destroyed his marriage. His addiction to dealing with his discontent by shopping ruined a beautiful relationship. I think some of us on a practical level need to be really, really, really careful about the ease of online shopping. Of how easy it is to feel better quickly. All you got to do is press send. And it becomes an instant high. This is what the 10th commandment is about, lest we miss the practical application to it. We are people who define. We are people who are continuously taught to define our success by how high the pile is of stuff we accumulate. Now, you may not have given in to that, but I'm telling you, the culture we live in tells us every day to define success by the pile, rather than by how deep our soul is cultivated. Like I said, it's the battleground. And one of the problems of living with that definition of success is that we can never quite get there. Somebody else is always going to have a bigger pile. You lose. It's always there. So here's the great principle today. Only those who have enough are free to give. Do you have enough? Can you just sit in the seat that you're in right now and go, if nothing else ever happened, I've got enough? There are a handful of things that define us as a church family. Things that fully reflect how we understand God's call on our lives together as family. Advent Conspiracy is one of those places where we experience such a definition. Now the band come up. I'm about done. But I don't want you to miss this. Advent Conspiracy is where we look at our family, we look at the people that we love the most, and we stare them down and we go, I think we've already got enough. Maybe we can give more to others who don't have. That's the essence of Advent Conspiracy. It has been for the last 8 or 9 years that we have done this. So this Christmas season, I hope we challenge you more than we ever have. It is our intention to go straight to the heart of why Jesus was born and why he died. That is the Christmas story, you know. He died so that we could receive. That's why he died. He, in his death, he gave. He gave to you and to me. And in the giving to us, he allows us to give again. You can only give if you have enough. Look what was said in Matthew chapter 10. Freely you have received, freely give. Friends, we receive love and grace and hope and purpose and joy and destiny and blessing. We are also people who are sitting on a wealth of material blessing. By comparison to everybody else in the world, we have all of these things. Not so that we can spend our lives pursuing more and accumulating more. That's not why we have freely received. We receive so that we can freely give. Because in giving, we become more like Jesus than in anything else we ever do. That's why today is the convergence of Thanksgiving and Christmas, all on one day. And my goodness, we got to study the 10th commandment on top of it all.